You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
2024 was quite an interesting year for the cocoa market. The price of cocoa, cacao, however it is you wish to refer to it, obviously cacao being the raw beans and cocoa being the roasted cacao beans, that market saw quite an increase in the prices in 2024 on fears of supply shortages out of the Ivory Coast. This time around, as we go into the festive period, it has seen almost a 45% decrease in a price over the 2025 year. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by economist at Oxford Economics Africa, Leona Estes, and to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Leona, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly an interesting year for soft commodities in general off the back of how some of the precious metals have been running. One might be surprised to see that this is the performance of the cocoa market, but that market has obviously had quite a bit of a different story, as I alluded to in the intro.
Yeah, like you mentioned, 2024 saw a very sharp rise in prices, and that was largely supply-driven. West Africa and Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana in specific experienced very erratic weather, and that along with the spread of various crop diseases and a shortage or a more expensive fertilizer that stemmed from the Ukraine-Russia conflict prevented farmers from actually treating their crops properly. So all those factors combined in kind of a perfect storm to drive cocoa prices to the historical highs that we saw in 2024.
Leona, let's take a look at the global markets. You touched on Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana being the West African countries that experienced some challenges there, but anyone that knows this market knows that between those two countries, they account for more than 50% of global production. I think the figure is closer to 60% of global production. Take us through what that kind of concentration means for global markets if those two countries are to have any sorts of problems.
Yeah, so it's close to 60% of global production comes from only Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana. And then there are obviously other smaller producers. Even in West Africa, there's smaller producers like Nigeria and Cameroon. So in the context of Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana specifically, the markets are also very regulated, with farm gate prices set according by the local regulator. So that means also that prices, market prices, don't fluctuate as you would see on a global level. So when there are price rallies, local farmers aren't necessarily incentivized or funded to the extent that they can actually adjust their farming practices accordingly. What is also, and we might touch on this a bit later in more detail, but what also happens if the farmers tend to even hold back supplies if they feel that the discrepancy between the farm gate price that they are paid and the actual prevailing market price is too big, they tend to hold back in anticipation of a farm gate price increase for the next season. So yeah, there's a lot of, basically global prices are driven by those two countries and global, obviously, supply dynamics as well. What this does create is it creates opportunities for smaller producers like the Nigerians and the Cameroons I mentioned earlier to come in and capitalize on the favorable price environment. So if there's a shortage in the main producers, you know, it's easier for a less regulated market like Cameroon to go and exploit that by selling, even though it's a small market and it's not necessarily going to move the needle on a, you know, on a country level or on a global scale. The farmers there are incentivized to kind of invest in the cocoa industry because they are now in a better position and a less regulated position to capitalize on the favorable prices. It also creates a problem where there's obviously smuggling incentive because Ivorian farmers or Ghanaian farmers can smuggle their cocoa across borders to less regulated markets where they can then sell that at higher prices. So that's kind of what the market distortion creates in terms of the bigger producers relative to the smaller ones.
Leona, let's take a look at what this does for the rest of the value chain. We know that a lot of the processing of cocoa then takes place in Europe, in countries like Germany and the Netherlands, and even Switzerland in part. What does that then do for the rest of the value chain, and ultimately what consumers then see as affordable products and pricing in the cocoa space?
Yeah, so obviously there's spillover. If there isn't enough cocoa to, you know, to meet demand, then that drives up prices. And that's something that, you know, if you walk into a grocery shop, you see either the price of a chocolate, you know, per gram or per 100 grams going up, or you see you're paying the same price, but the, all of a sudden the chocolate is now smaller. So, which is obviously that something we refer to as shrinkflation. So that's obviously the gist of it. Another bigger thing that's kind of evolving is these chocolate manufacturers looking to alternatives, other ingredients that provide a similar taste or is a substitute for the actual thing when cocoa becomes either too scarce or too expensive. And just in terms of the European market, which is the obviously the main buyer, and most of West Africa's cocoa is exported to Europe and you know, the EU in particular, the EU is also or has been looking to implement the EU deforestation regulation, which it encompasses a few commodities, but cocoa is one of them, and they want to prevent cocoa in this instance being imported, that's the production thereof is linked to deforestation activities. But because West Africa is such an important market, and obviously because there's a lot of track and trace investment and a lot of, you know, implementation hurdles involved in that process, they've had to postpone the implementation of the EUDR twice. So that just kind of underscores the importance of the West African cocoa farming industry when you're looking at the, you know, the global scale of, you know, where we actually, firstly, where the manufacturers of the, you know, chocolate products get their cocoa from, and then also what the product that we end up buying, you know, where that comes from, and how those prices are influenced.
Leona, let's take a look at the trading side of it. With cocoa prices down 45% since January of 2025, surely the traders that are involved in the markets side of cocoa would be interested to see whether or not prices continue to drop, whether or not this might be the area of rebound. What seems to be kind of a fair cocoa price at the moment, all of these factors considered?
So when you're looking at the farm gate prices currently in Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, they both set at around $5,000 a ton. So that is kind of then implied as a price floor for cocoa at the moment. So what's happened now is that in the build-up, usually the main harvest season starts in October of each year, usually. So in the build-up to this year's October 2025, farmers were obviously starting to anticipate that there's going to be an increase and a correction in the farm gate price. So it's strategic in that sense to then sort of hold back some of the supplies to wait until obviously the price increases, so you can sell it at a higher price. So with that happening and with prices being hiked to around $5,000 a ton, farmers have now obviously artificially boosted supply significantly to the extent that's fueled this downturn in cocoa prices. So with that in mind, from a trading perspective, your margin gets squeezed because your selling price and the price that you have to buy cocoa at now, which is the farm gate price, are so close together. So traders' liquidity and ability to actually buy the cocoa is also decreasing. So what's happened now recently is that with the sharp increase in cocoa bean arrivals at ports in West Africa, it's resulted in congestion and backlogs of supplies at these ports, because obviously farmers are pushing more and more beans into the market, but there isn't enough liquidity in the market to actually buy this cocoa. And with prices coming down, there's even been reports of farmers now just trying to get all the beans that they can off the trees, because they are fearing that regulators will now cut or will consider, you know, cutting the farm gate price. So that kind of just is fueling the cycle. But I do feel that this, and it's already you know, cocoa futures, US futures turned at just above $5,000 a ton, and it's now sitting at about 6,200 again. And I think that in the near term, we might see prices actually increasing a little bit, because the decrease in the price hasn't necessarily been underpinned by improving supply, improving farming conditions or farming techniques in West Africa, or greater plantations to that extent. The structural issues that resulted in the supply squeeze over 2023-2024 is still present in the market. So it's mostly short-term dynamics driving these price increases and price decreases. So I don't think that we'll see prices necessarily sitting at a fixed level in the near term. We'll probably continue seeing some short-term volatility.
Luna, let's wrap up the conversation taking a look at the other markets out there and what they could potentially bring to the table. We know Latin America, particularly countries like Ecuador, seem to be increasing their production quite a bit, and there are some estimates that say that they might rival the likes of Ghana in the near future. I want to take a look at what that does for the cocoa market, but also taking a look at the fact that this is something you mentioned earlier in the conversation, the strict laws and regulations, at least from an EU perspective around traceability, seem to be coming in even more so now than ever. And this creates that conundrum where suppliers, producers have to now ensure that they abide by the laws, but also that the market itself agrees with some of the pricing that's there. Take us through kind of just how the shift is playing itself out and perhaps how it could change the cocoa prices in the near future.
Yeah, so I think, and this is true for, you know, many agricultural goods, is once, you know, prices increase, everyone wants to plant that crop because, you know, it's looking like the most, you know, profitable thing out there. And then once supply increases and prices come back down, you know, you're kind of back to square one. So in the case of cocoa, I think there's definitely gains to be made, and the marginal gains for the smaller producers, some that you mentioned, there's, you know, others in Africa as well, in Latin America, the marginal gains to be made there, I think, is quite significant, because obviously they have kind of an informal, like, second mover's advantage. So they can look at the bigger producers and see, you know, where they can, I guess, be more strategic. And then also they have the advantage of, you know, they were to, you know, exploit or access the EU market, they can start implementing those regulations. Easier for them to do on a smaller scale and to build up than it is for a Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, who already has a massive market, to now go and kind of backwards engineer that whole track and trace process. So they, and that coupled with that, there's more, they're more responsive to actual, you know, market pricing, that the free market system works a little bit better and works faster in those smaller producing countries. Yeah, so it's difficult to see that necessarily, or, you know, projecting which countries will become the next big player, because it also takes time for crops to actually start yielding. I think it's about 5 to 7 years for, you know, a crop to actually, you know, become fully productive. So a lot can change in that timeline, I think. But I do think that it offers diversification opportunities for a lot of other, you know, countries. And in terms of just from a consumer perspective, it's obviously better. And the risk profile of things like this supply squeezes happening will decrease, or the risk profile thereof will improve if you've got a broader range of producers. So from a country perspective, even if you're looking at Ivory Coast specifically, they know that they are overexposed to cocoa, and they have, you know, focusing a little bit more on other commodities like gold and oil and gas. But from a consumer perspective as well, we will, you know, at the end of the day, benefit if there's a broader range of producers that limit supply volatility, and then obviously leads to more stable prices.
The interesting world of cocoa and the pricing of the cocoa market. We'll see how this shapes up and what continues to drive this market as we go into the new year. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Luna Esterhazy, the economist at Oxford Economics Africa, for joining us to take a look at the cocoa market and what we make of it.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.